Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. With Amanda Howard and Robert McKnight.
Hello and welcome to a brand new season of Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. Amanda, it's season 10.
I know. Someone asked me the other day, oh, do you have a podcast? And I go, yeah. And so she looked it up and goes, oh, you've just done 9 seasons. I went, yeah. That's me. So it's great that
Absolutely.
We're at 10. And during this season, I think we hit 100 episodes. So,
oh.
Yeah. So I do have them all numbered and I do keep an order of them because, as we all know, I have that document of 25 years of podcasts.
Mm.
Yes, and we're getting very close to our 100th episode.
Wow, that'll be huge. How can we celebrate? Bring you our favourite serial killers of all time, or what do we do?
I don't know. People send in suggestions and tell us what you think you'd like us to do for that very special 100th episode. It is coming soon.
I'd say we'd do a nudie episode, but that's situation normal, really.
Well, yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the news stories of this week before we get to our big profile on Scott Peterson. A neonatal nurse, Lucy Letby, has faced a British court accused of murdering 8 babies, 5 boys and 3 girls in a 12-month killing spree at Chester Hospital in late 2015 and early 2016. The 30-year-old nurse is also charged with attempted murder of another 10 babies, 5 boys and 5 girls, and has been remanded in custody and the case transferred to a higher court. The babies were all patients at the Countess of Chester Hospital in Chester, where Mrs. Letby worked as a nurse. A police investigation began in 2017 to uncover the causes of a spike of deaths of 17 babies and 16 non-fatal collapses of babies from March 2015 until July 2016. Amanda, we see this again and again. Someone in a position of trust accused of killing those in their care.
Yes, and this has been a case that, as we can see, it has been ongoing since 2016. This is the third time that she's actually been arrested for this. So she was arrested in July in 2017 and then again in July 2018 and now again in 2020. And it's because they did a massive investigation, because she has worked at several hospitals, it needed to be a larger scale. And, yes, these people that have this sort of control, nurses, doctors, caregivers, foster care, all this sort of stuff, we see this, that they take on these roles. And even when we did Elizabeth Wetlaufer, they take on these roles and then they find that they have this innate urge to do harm, usually so then they can look like the hero, or, as in Wetlaufer's case, because she was sick of these patients and found them revolting.
Yeah,
so we don't know if there's a motive here, and it's still early days, even though this has been going on for years. But it's going to be interesting to see what this happens, because a lot of families of children have spoken out for Nurse Letby, saying that, you know, that she was amazing. One of them had her as, you know, like a godparent or something. And there's all of this sort of stuff going on, saying this is someone who, you know, was going to do this for her whole entire life, because she's actually quite a young nurse and only a newly experienced nurse when this all happened. But everyone's saying, you know, they cannot believe that this is who kills. And this is what we say again and again in this podcast. It's the least expected people that we find out are the killers. And the photos that are out there of this alleged killer, she's, you know, holding up baby clothes and she's smiling, a young blonde girl, you know, just not what you think of when you think of a serial killer.
Yeah, I think that's really, really a good point. It's shocking, but we will follow this case. We will follow this case and see what happens and bring you any updates. Meanwhile, let's turn our attention to South Korea, where a man has admitted to murdering 14 women and girls 3 decades ago in one of the country's most notorious serial killing cases. Lee Chung-jae said he was surprised he wasn't caught earlier. The admission comes after an innocent man was actually jailed for one of the murders and spent 20 years in jail. He was released in 2008, but his identity has been kept secret. Amanda, this killer always believed his crimes would be revealed one day, but that didn't stop him.
No, it didn't. And this is one of those huge cases that has sort of hung around. The Hwaesong serial killers has been a cold case for so long. And in South Korea, they actually have a statute of limitations on murders as well. So he couldn't actually be charged with most of the killings, but he was happy to confess. And he was quite shocked. And he sort of was only caught because one of the victims ended up being a family member. And so that's sort of how they sort of linked it. And once he was linked to that case, he said, well, how about all of these others I've done because I can't be charged with them now? So, you know, it's just a cunning attempt at a power play. So it's quite interesting. But, yeah, when this broke, because it actually broke last year, but now it's actually going through the courts, it's quite amazing how it has twisted and turned over the years. As you said, someone else was actually charged and sentenced to life for these crimes. But thankfully he didn't get the death penalty, which is quite surprising, that he's now... Now, you know, the actual serial killer, Lee Jong-jae, has actually been arrested purely because of one of the victims being a family member.
It's really interesting to me, the serial killers that want people to know of their work and the others that profess their innocence even though we know they're guilty. Yeah. They've been found guilty.
Yeah, there is those two trains of thoughts, and both of them are power plays. We have the one power play where you say that they protest their innocence and they sort of fight for that and they go down to their dying breath like Ivan Milat did, protesting their innocence, because that's the kind of play that they have, because they can't sort of say, oh, I've got other cases that you should be looking at. It's about, you know, always being the innocent party, and they basically perceive themselves as the victim in all of this. So this is that narcissism that comes across. Then there's these others who, oh, yeah, well, I've got more. You know, you've only found half of them, you know, like we've seen with Samuel Little and to a lesser extent Israel Keyes, who sort of alluded to all these cases but didn't want to say too much about them and now we'll never know. That's a different sort of power play, because they know that they can gain more by giving out these little shreds of evidence and they remain relevant, and that's their narcissism coming forward. So, you know, Two different power plays, but for the same result, and that is that they remain relevant.
Well, the Yorkshire Ripper, Peter Sutcliffe, has died aged 74. He was jailed for murdering 13 women and attempted murder of a further 7 from 1975 to 1980. The funeral is believed to have been arranged by his ex-wife, Sonia, and took place in a top-secret ceremony to avoid a public backlash. Amanda, if the location of this grave becomes known, is it possible it would be turned into some kind of morbid shrine?
I don't think so. I mean, it would be something that, oh, yeah, you're in Yorkshire, go and have a look at his grave. And there is some over the years, like Ed Gein's headstone has been stolen and returned several times, and there's been a replacement done. And there are some that get graffitied or smashed up. So less of a morbid shrine and like a thrill-seeking thing, it would be more about a backlash saying that he is a horrible, evil person and doesn't deserve to be in consecrated ground and all of that sort of stuff. So I think it would go the other way. Yeah, there would be people like me who would want to go and see it purely just to see it, but I'd also want to go to all of the sites where he had attacked these poor women. But I don't think it would be, you know, covered in flowers and candles and blessings and things like that. He's very much a very hated man in England, and all of the people, and I know people that have written books on him and spoken to him. I tried, but he said no. I just got a letter back from him saying, no, I'm not going to talk to you, which is fine. But even those people that have spent time with him and written about him still feel the joy that he's now dead finally.
Right. Okay, very interesting. Look, don't forget, you can get full access to the previous collection of Monsters Who Murder episodes. We're in season 10, but the whole collection is up on our Patreon page for as little as $5 per month. So if you want to hear some classic episodes and some really in-depth cases, go to patreon.com/MWMconfessions. And while you're there, check out the other tiers and see what's available, including a secret group chat on Facebook that Amanda hosts, and you can interact contact with the serial killer whisperer. All right, we'll take a break, and in a moment, Scott Peterson.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's the most talked about TV show that's not on TV.
And I think you guys are amazing.
With raw, honest opinions.
This was not a mistake. This was a lie.
Exclusive stories.
Some industry insiders have been talking about this.
Is that a Ben Robin Robbo exclusive?
And plenty of famous faces.
I'm not wasting these gold moments on 60 Minutes.
The Ben Robin Robbo Show is the new way to stream your news.
This is the stuff that headlines are made of.
Live every Monday to Thursday at 1 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Ticker TV or Facebook and Twitter at BRR Show. Watch live or on demand.
It's the Ben Robin Robbo, Ben Robin Robbo, Ben Robin Robbo Show.
In Modesto, California, at 8:30 p.m. on December 23, 2002, Lacey Peterson spoke to her mother on the phone. They were making plans for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. Lacey also spoke of her pregnancy and how she was feeling. It was the last known living confirmation of Lacey Peterson. Her husband, Scott, claimed he saw her for the final time on Christmas Eve morning at 9:30 a.m. as he left to go golfing. That's what he told friends he would be doing that day. He would later tell police she had planned chores for the day that included some final cleaning, Christmas baking, and she would also walk the family's golden retriever, Mackenzie. Later that morning, the dog was found twice by two different neighbours. Mackenzie had somehow gotten free from the Peterson yard and was muddy. Peterson returned later that afternoon to find Lacey not home, but her car was in the driveway. He informed her family. 4 months later, on April 13, 2003, two people walking their dog made a disturbing discovery. On the banks of a swampy region of the Berkeley area of San Francisco Bay, a decomposing full-term baby boy, with the umbilical cord still attached, was floating amongst the vegetation. According to ABC News, the baby was found with a significant injury to its body, as well as a plastic cord tied around its tiny throat. However, other sources claim the baby had been born post-mortem in what is called a coffin death. Amanda, can you explain what a coffin death is?
Okay, we're going to get into some pretty gruesome stuff with this case. But, yeah, what a coffin death is when a woman is quite pregnant when she dies, and as the decomposition begins and the body actually swells, it actually pushes the child out through the birth canal. It can sometimes come through, like, the front of the stomach as well. But usually the baby is squashed by the decomposing abdomen of its mother, and it pushes the baby out, and so the baby is expelled from the body like it would be a normal death, but it actually happens post-death, or post being killed. And it's actually been seen a lot when people have dug up coffins and they found that a pregnant woman who had died either during childbirth or just prior to, that they've actually expelled the baby after they've been interred.
Is the baby alive?
No. No. Right. Once the mum dies, the baby has a very short window of time that they can be taken from the mother's womb. Usually if this happens, it can happen, like mother may have cancer or something and may be in hospital and she's about to expire. They usually start some artificial respiration until they can actually get the baby out of the mother. It's happened. There has been women who have gone into comas that have then passed away and things like that. So if there is a viability of taking the baby before death or very soon after that, they do that. But this is what happens, and it's happened for thousands of years, that women that have died during pregnancy or during childbirth then expel that baby once they've died.
Okay. Well, look, the following day, the torso of a woman was also found. The body was missing its head, arms and legs, but was still clothed in tan pants and a maternity bra. 5 days later, DNA was able to identify the bodies as Lacey Peterson and her unborn baby, Connor. With the identification of the pair, Lacey's husband, Scott, was arrested the same day. So let's get to his various interrogations, Amanda. To start, this is the first interview he had on just after midnight on Christmas Day, the day after he had reported Lacey missing a few hours earlier. Now, look, obviously at this time, she's not being found, so it's essentially a missing persons case. So Amanda sent me the scene.
Okay, well, the scene is actually filmed from above, which is what we see often with these sorts of interviews, because it isn't sort of that interrogation time. This is just about trying to find out what's going on. The camera is facing Scott Peterson and he's leaning forward on the table. The room's actually very, very small, so there is barely enough room between him and the wall behind him, besides the table and the officers on the other side of the table. Peterson has short dark hair. He's actually quite an attractive man, and people are very much fans of him, I think, because of his attractiveness. I find him heinous and disgusting, but he is a good-looking man. Dean Cain played him in a midday movie on this case, so there's your image of what he looks like. So he was wearing a very heavy cream jacket with a brown collar, a blue shirt underneath. And when we see him for the first time, he's actually already sitting down in the room. And so the recording starts once they've actually started. He's playing with something in front of him that looks like a pair of sunglasses, which is quite odd at midnight. But anyway, an officer comes in and gives him a cup that Peterson actually drinks from quite quickly. And then the officer makes the usual introductions and explains what the process is going to be. As the officer, who is Detective Al Bracini, it talks, Peterson actually sits back in his chair, puts his hands in his pockets and just sort of chills. So there's absolutely no sort of concerns or anything from Peterson, which is quite unusual.
Okay, well, Detective Bracini then asks Peterson to go over the day.
Just tell me about the morning. Okay. I don't know what time we got up. Probably Lacey got up and went and she had some cereal for breakfast. She eats right when she wakes up, otherwise she gets sick because she's pregnant. I laid around in bed longer. I got up at 8 o'clock probably or so. Showered. We were watching her favorite show, Martha Stewart. Watched a little bit of that.
Okay, so you can already see what he's doing here. What is he doing?
Well, you know, we see this in hindsight. So, of course, it's very easy to sort of make these judgments when we know what the outcome is. But he's setting up this persona of being the dutiful husband. You know, he's talking about that he was concerned about her morning sickness and, you know, that her pregnancy is getting on. I think she was about 7, 8 months, maybe even 6. Like, she was heavily pregnant. You know, and that he says that they sat together and they watched her favorite show together. You know, he's sort of saying, you know, I just did what she wanted me to do and I was there and being a wonderful doting husband.
Now, I also spotted something. Like another interview we did a while ago, this officer is writing down his statement word for word. Now, I've got to say, I hope we don't see a repeat of him stopping the conversation so he can catch up. Oh, that was painful.
Yeah, I know. It's not going to be as bad. But, yeah, I thought, please, please, please don't do this. Do not start writing down every word, you know. But I think what it comes down to, like, he isn't going to be that bad, but he will sort of go over a few things sometimes, but he does let Peterson talk. But please, police departments, turn on your mobile phones and record this or something. Like, ask for a better recording.
Maybe they're just old school.
I mean, some of them, there is one that we actually had to pull because the quality was so bad, but it's a fantastic episode that I do hope that we do. It was filmed like 5 years ago and it's on like a VCR tape. Like, it's, you know, it's like, really, guys? And I know it's because they do re-record over them, but like, surely there's a statute of limitations that they have to sort of keep these things for a long time. But I know that they do a lot of interviews because someone wants to come in and complain about the lady next door with her cats, you know, and I get that. But it's just so shocking to me that there is still officers that sit there and notate every single thing the person being interviewed says and stops them. But this isn't going to be that bad, I promise.
Okay. Well, Detective Bracini then asked Peterson to continue with his rundown.
You didn't watch the whole thing, though?
No.
You remember what part you saw?
I mean, I don't know what Some could be the old title. Okay. Cookies of some sort. They're talking about what to do with meringue.
And I can't remember. Your house, you had the converted garage area, is that your TV room like?
Yeah.
Is that where you were then? Wait, did you eat any breakfast?
Yeah, that was true.
Okay, and then what? When did you realize you were going to go fishing?
That was a morning decision. It's either
that was a morning.
So play golf at the club or go fishing.
Okay.
Seemed too cold to go play golf at the club. So just decided to 9:30 or whatever that. Mm-hmm. Just told what she was going to do for the day and.
Okay, so Bob, she told you what she was going to do for the day.
Yeah.
And what was that?
She's going to finish cleaning up. Like I said, she's locked in the kitchen floor. Take the dog for a walk, and then she's going to the store to buy for Christmas morning breakfast tomorrow. And that was going to be involved prep. So that was for afternoon, just prepping the breakfast. And she's going to make gingerbread cookies for tonight.
What was she mopping?
The tile in the entryway area.
The entry of your front door or the entry of your little interior converted?
Well, not the front door, but that back door that we came in.
Right, where the mop was outside of it?
Where
your dogs? The one out to your back door?
Okay, you have the converted garage,
yeah.
Right? Then you have the kitchen,
yeah.
Then you have a room with two chairs in it.
Right.
That room. Okay. And the kitchen. I don't know how far she planned to go. She had me put the bucket by the front door for her.
So she asked you to put the mop bucket by the front door?
Yeah, she's once pregnant, I can't pick it up or anything, so I filled it up for her. Put it in the central office.
How did you move it back after or when you come home, or how did it get outside?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you put it out there?
Dog and the cat ran in. Yeah, she wasn't about to lift anything heavy.
Now, this is interesting to me because now that you've said it, I can hear him talking about how he did things for her, like moving the mop where she needed it.
Yeah, but like the officer asked him, well, where was she going to mop? Now, I'm not being sexist, but Robert, if your wife was going to say, well, I'm just going to mop today, well, would you know that she was going to do the exact entrance way and that's it? Like,
No, I guess not. No. I guess you would say, I'm just going to mop the kitchen or whatever it might be. I don't know. You might. I don't know.
No, I think this is more about him filling in gaps. So he needs to have an answer. And it's a tactic that they use because if he says, oh, Shay was going to mop the front area. Now, the police had been through the house that night once they had been alerted that she had disappeared. They actually come to the Peterson house before taking him to be interviewed. Now, it's quite interesting because the officer actually points out at various locations that she could have mopped, and Peterson's just sort of says, oh, yeah, it was the entryway and stuff. And it's these sorts of things that then they can actually go through later and say, well, why did you say that? Because that's not actually what happened, And at the same time, he's trying to appear helpful and saying, yes, I bought in the mop for her. But I will say, she's heavily pregnant. It's Christmas Eve. She's mopping the house anyway, and he's going out to play golf. Now, I'm saying that in inverted commas because that's going to come up later.
Sorry, but what's your point here? What's wrong?
Exactly. Exactly. but it's about filling in those gaps that he thinks that he needs to do. Like most men go, I have no idea. I didn't even know that she had a mop, Like it's just sort of stuff like that.
Didn't even know she had a mop. Well, oh, my God, Amanda.
I don't have a mop.
Just for the record, yeah. I'm the one who usually mops the floors in my house.
I don't have a choice.
Look, Were police suspecting him of something at this point?
Well, yes and no. I mean, people don't disappear. I mean, I know they do, and there's thousands that do every year, but this is a middle-aged woman. Oh, she was about 30, so I wouldn't say that. And she was heavily pregnant, and it's not a typical sort of disappearance. You know, it's not sort of someone who's packed their bags and they're going away because they can't cope or something like that. So it is an unusual case. So they have to take it seriously, you know, but at the same time, they could also be thinking, so she's gone to walk the dog because the dog was found out. You know, maybe she's passed out somewhere and been rushed to a hospital and, you know, and is unconscious or something and they don't have her details. So there's all these different scenarios that they need to play out because murder is sort of the last sort of area that they need to go through. It's more about the other possible consequences.
And murder is uncommon. No matter how much we speak about it on this podcast, in society, it is actually not that common to have someone murder someone.
Yeah.
All right. Peterson was then asked what Lacey was wearing when he last saw her.
So when you left, do you remember what she was wearing?
Black pants, white long sleeve top.
The kind of buttons or
no, just like the long sleeve t-shirt kind of thing, but you know, didn't say anything on it or
jacket or shoes?
No
shoes. Do you notice her jacket was there, or did she wear it? Like if she went walking at 10 o'clock or 9:30,
she just steals my stuff.
She uses your stuff?
Yeah, because, you know, stuff would turn to stuff, so I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know. She could have had her or mine or nothing, I don't know.
How about shoes? Does she have a certain kind of shoes that she walks in or?
Yeah, I use a pair of white tennis shoes.
Did you remember if they were there or not?
The officers and I looked for them in their normal place, which is outside by her wet bar. Uh-huh. They were not there, but we didn't look further, so they could be in the house. They weren't where they normally left. You saw mine where those were. That's where they normally keep.
Now, when her body was found, she was in tan pants. Is this him trying to deceive or, again, filling in gaps, or did she get changed?
I mean, it's really difficult to know, but this could be an attempt to deceive that, you know, he starts to get vague on her shoes, you know, and says he didn't sort of look for them. But he's so calm and, you know, he doesn't appear too worried. I mean, if this was my wife and she was heavily pregnant, she's not at home, I'd be freaking out. I would be hysterical. Yeah. I mean, to sort of use my own experience, my husband was gone for an hour and I was freaking out trying to find him and ringing places and trying to work out where he is before I unfortunately found him. It's interesting that he's so calm and can go, yeah, I assume she had shoes on. Yeah, I don't know about a coat. You know, he's sort of so blasé. I would be saying, I don't care what she was wearing, just find her, you know, and it's just amazing. But it's what the detective will later say, you know, that it sort of starts to come through in this interview because he is so calm.
Well, Brachini then takes Peterson through his timeline. He talks about heading out to the fishing spot, which is more than an hour's drive away from their home.
Okay, you drove straight there?
I did.
You stop for lunch?
No.
You buy bait?
No, not a bait fisherman.
You buy a lunch? You didn't eat nothing? You didn't take a lunch?
No, I didn't. I was damn hungry for that pizza when I got home.
Okay, so if you got to the about 5 minutes to one, you get your boat in, how long do you think you stayed in the water?
Felt like an hour and a half or so, but I didn't have a watch or anything, but see if I was getting home at 30 or 2, I don't know, an hour and a half, I guess, probably accurate.
you have a map for that area, or
no?
Would you just wing it? So you just, when you got in your boat and you took off, did you go very far? Or?
Well, I mean, probably a couple miles. I went north, found a like a little island kind of deal there. Island had a bunch of trash on it. I remember a big sign that said no landing. It looked like some broken piers around it. I just assumed it would be a decent, you know, shallow area.
Did you troll?
A little bit. I mean, a lot of the reason I went was just to get that boat in the water to see, you know.
Yeah.
So he's saying he drove an hour each way to go fishing for 90 minutes just to try out a new boat?
Yeah, so this is him trying to extend this timeline of him being away from the home. So what's that, an hour each way? So it's 3.5 hours that he isn't home, and apparently this is where he went, you know. But this is the doting husband who sits with his wife and watches Martha Stewart, who on Christmas Eve, while she's heavily pregnant cleaning the house, is going fishing. Now, the interesting part is he's going fishing, not golfing, like he'd already said, but we will get to that a bit further.
I was going to ask you about that because I had in my head, have I misremembered? Because I thought we were talking about golfing at one point.
Yes.
But, okay, you said we're going to come to that.
Yeah, we will.
I get the feeling the detective is not buying it, and especially if there's different stories going on. But he's still playing along. But then during the interview, Peterson takes a phone call. Lacey's half-sister Amy calls him. She's at the Peterson home. The call lasts a minute, 15 seconds. Peterson tells the detective who it was, and he just returns back to Peterson's timeline without skipping a beat.
Okay, so you fish 90 minutes about, then what, you go back to the marina, get back in your boat.
Yeah.
You see anybody? You talk to anybody out there?
Talked to a couple guys fishing, asked me, you know, to catch anything, and no, they didn't either. The guys working, fixing, maintenance guys got a good laugh from me trying to back down the trailer.
Okay.
So a couple guys laughed and a couple guys talked about fishing.
Then what? How did you get there?
Highway, you mean?
Yeah.
What's the highway to Oakland? It's 580.
Yeah.
And they take 80 north, right? To go to, like, home to Sacramento or.
So you took 580 to 80 north? Okay.
Yeah. And it's like second exit in Berkeley.
Come home the same way?
Yeah.
You have to stop for gas?
Stop for gas, and I guess it's Livermore, but. Which one's near the Altamont?
Livermore, okay. Where'd you stop?
I think it's a Chevron station. There's a bus around there.
Was that on the way home or the way in there?
Way home.
How'd you pay?
Credit card.
I've got to say, he seems very convincing. He isn't swayed. He's got answers for everything.
Yeah, and it's amazing. You know, he made sure he used his credit card at a region long way away from where she's found, you know, and make sure that he's seen on all these cameras going along all these highways, you know. And most of his saying is the truth. He just wasn't fishing.
Well, Peterson, in fact, has Lacey's phone with him and plays it for the detective. He plays the answering machine message he'd left when he called Lacey to say he was on his way home. This guy's cunning. Have a listen.
Did you, when you left, what were you wearing when you left?
Blue jeans and blue t-shirt.
And what were those shoes?
Oh, Timberland.
Which jacket? In your jacket in your truck?
Well, I left the house. I didn't have a jacket on.
Right.
But I was in the warehouse. I had that green pullover on that was in my truck, you saw. When it started raining, I had a camo jacket on in the boat and a tan hat.
Okay. Okay, so then you went back to the shop. You unhooked the boat. What happened? What else? Did you do anything else?
No, unhooked it. I guess I saw that fax. Blake getting home, so straight home.
Anybody else in the warehouse area?
Not this afternoon. There was a field there this morning.
Now, Amanda, you made this point earlier. He made sure he was seen.
Yeah, you know, and he was only seen in the morning getting the boat. So, but when he returns later that afternoon, no one sees him, you know. But I have to say that detective writing is starting to get to me a bit. I didn't realise that.
I'm not really noticing it. It's okay this time. It's not like that other case that was just painful.
Yeah, no, it's not that bad, but it is a bit slower. But I think at the same time it does sort of – make these people continue to talk. So when someone needs to fill those gaps, by having gaps made available to them, you know, they sort of watch what's being written down. You know, it's like when you go to a job interview and people are writing down what you're saying. So you keep talking because you know they're going to keep writing if you keep talking. So you keep talking, and maybe that's why I don't get jobs. But this is what he's doing. He's trying to fill those gaps, and so. Obviously, we can't see it, but the detective starts to write things down and Peterson continues to try and fill those gaps.
Now, let's get to the point where Peterson is getting home. He says a few things here that will later be proven as lies, but I've got to say at this time, he sounds very convincing.
Okay, then you got home. Then how'd you go? What door did you go in?
When I would call our back door, which is that French door where my shoes were at.
See your dog out there?
Yeah. Yeah, he's there.
And did he still have his leash on?
Mm-hmm. So I took the hat off, obviously.
What'd you do with it?
Put it on the picnic table.
French doors where I want?
Yes.
Okay, what'd you do when you go in?
Dog and the cat followed me in, so I dumped out that mop water and the cat went over to it.
Where was the mop bucket?
If you remember our front door, there's a little white wood piece built in, just in front of that.
Okay, so your dog and cat come in with, through the doors, and your cat goes over to this bucket.
Yep.
And what was it, going to drink out of it, or?
Looked like it to me.
So you just picked it up and walked it out the front door then?
No, that little side door.
Okay.
So it was right outside of it.
And then you just set it out there?
No, it didn't. Set it there.
Then what'd you do?
Put my clothes in the washer, took out those rags, threw my clothes in there.
Starting to get a little bit fishy. He comes home, meets the pets, does a load of washing.
Yeah, yeah. So it's amazing that this man who lets his wife stay home and clean while he goes fishing or golfing or whatever his story he wants it to be, suddenly has to come in the back door and instantly go and wash his clothes after he's moved that mop, of course, because that's the important thing. You know, but it's interesting that for a man who doesn't care that his pregnant wife is mopping, and I'm going to stick to that, I'm sorry, he puts on this load of washing and then throws in some cloths as well, you know, but there is so many pieces to this part of the story that are actually later alleged to be incorrect. One, the dog was so muddy that he would have had to have washed his hands because the dog was putrid. So, but he doesn't mention that. He doesn't say, oh, my God, and Mac come home and he was muddy and I had to take off his leash and everything and I got dirty because he jumped on me, you know. Because we're talking December in America, so it's cold. you know, and but there's none of this. And then he, you know, feeds the cat and the dog dutifully and moves out the mop. And then the clothes that he had on that day when he went fishing but didn't actually fish, he had to wash those and some rags. So it's alleged that what went into the wash for that load was actually the clothes that he was wearing when he killed his wife and likely needed to wash them.
Well, in all of that timeline when he got home, there was one important part missing.
Were you calling for Lacey or?
Oh, yeah, of course.
But she wasn't home?
No. Assumed she's at her mom's.
You put your jeans, your blue t-shirt, anything else in there?
I think that green pullover was in there too, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Did you start the washer?
Yeah.
Did you put soap? Mm-hmm. Okay, then what?
Grab some pizza from the fridge.
Put the box out?
Yeah, put it on the counter like the button. Lots of milk. And jump in the shower.
Is there anything this guy doesn't have an answer for?
No, he does have answers because most of it is actually the truth, except for the fishing part. That's the actually the murder part.
And the
part.
Killing the wife.
Yeah, yeah. You know, but so it's easy for him to recall these things because this is what happened. He has killed his wife and then he's taken her in the boat, dumped her and then come back, cleaned up, that's why the mop's there, and the rags, and throws his clothes into wash, and then he has to shower as well because he needs to clean himself off, you know. But he's not being very emotional, and I know you don't get emotional talk about that, you need to go and have a shower, but he's not talking about, oh, well, I called out and my wife didn't answer, so I just assumed she's there somewhere and I'll just go and have a shower, you know. It's not what happens, you know, and it's just so matter of fact that even Lucy's, even Lacey's sister called, you know, he didn't panic, you know, he didn't go, oh my God, have they found her, you know, oh, hopefully that this is the cause. Nothing like that. It's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Okay, well, let's go back to the interview. The detective raises a very interesting question.
So you guys were supposed to be there. You're supposed to go to dinner there tonight at 6:30 or last night at 6:30?
Right.
Okay, so you told Sharon or did you talk to Ron?
Talked to Mom, talked to Sharon.
And which
I asked if Lacey was there. Told me no.
Who called us?
Ron did.
Did he tell you who's going to call? What? Who else? Did you call other people in?
I called Sharon, and then I called a couple of Lacey's closer friends, I think Stacy and Renee. And then I was had the phone book out to call hospitals when I think Sharon called me back at that point and said that they would do that, and called the police. And for me to check the neighbors and go to the park.
Now, is it just me or does he get vague when questions get tough?
Yeah, I mean, he could say that they watched Martha Stewart make pancakes, but he doesn't remember who he called looking for his wife. So this is an attempt at evasion. So he sort of makes it vague enough that it's a sweeping statement because he can't say, oh, well, I rang Julie at 12 o'clock because when they go and check with Julie will go, no. So he says, oh, yeah, I got out the phone book and, you know, I rung her best friend because he would need to definitely do that. You know, but this is a type of tactic that they use when he doesn't want to leave a larger footprint about the parts of the puzzle that aren't truthful. So, you know, he knows what has happened and everything. So he needs to sort of get the right specifics down. He knows that he can lay down exactly what happened in the morning because, let's face it, there's no one else to go against that statement because it was just him and her. But in the afternoon when he has to play the game, he sort of gets vague and just sort of starts to act like, oh, well, I just – you know, I just assume that she's somewhere and we'll find her, you know, and that her parents actually have to go and make all these phone calls, you know. And it's something that when we do the Chris Watts case soon, you know, he doesn't want too many alarm bells going off, you know. He just wants to keep the story straight that he's come home, but there's no emotion, you know. But the fact that the police turned up so quickly to his house once he'd rung his parents, he wasn't prepared for that.
Mm.
And so now he doesn't have as much time as he thought he would have because, you know, because everyone believes you have to wait 24 to 48 hours before you report someone as missing. But with a case like this, this is a pregnant woman who isn't at home where she should be. It rings alarm bells that, you know, it's not some teenage runaway that the police don't care about. And that's one of the worst scenes because they often turn up to be the most vulnerable people that do get taken. But this case is like, yeah, no, this is a white, good-looking, middle-aged woman who's pregnant in a good suburb. They are going to act quickly, and he wasn't expecting that.
Interesting. You sort of mentioned it there. It was Peterson who alerted the family, but it wasn't him who made the phone call to the police. In fact, it was Lacey's stepfather. Have a listen to that call.
Mum, to the fact. How can I help you?
Yes, my son-in-law called. He's been playing golf this morning at 9:30. My daughter's been missing since this morning. She's 8 months pregnant. She took her dog for a walk in the park.
Mm-hmm.
The dog came home with just a leash on.
And the dog came back without your daughter?
Right.
Okay, what is your address, sister?
Well, I'm at...
Is that where she's...
No, it's over at Maloma Park is where she went for the walk. Yeah. Well, it's not like the dead, if I can't remember.
What's your cell phone number, sir, in case you get disconnected?
It's, 404...
Uh-huh.
Jesus, I can't believe I'm going for like that. 404...
Okay, so what's the address where she lives and she's missing from?
Her address is...
Is that between Encina and Edgeworth Drive?
Yeah.
Okay, is that a house in a... What is your name?
My name is Ron. I'm her stepdad.
Okay, what is your name?
Grant.
G-R-A-N-S-K-Y?
R-A-N-T-S-K-I. Okay. Her husband, Scott Peterson, is on way over the park.
What's your stepdaughter's name?
Scott Peterson.
No, your stepdaughter.
Lacey Peterson.
Lacey, P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N, right?
P-E-T-E-R-S-O-N.
And she's white, black, Hispanic, Asian?
She's Portuguese and white.
How old is she?
She's 26.
Did she leave the house and didn't come back?
That we don't know. We just got a call from our son-in-law that he left this morning at 9:30 to play golf. He was at home about a half hour ago. Nowhere around.
Okay, so she went to walk the dog.
Walked it in that park. That's the Loma Park. Is that park over there with the phone? Yeah. Yeah. It's 100 scenic over there, you know, by the tennis court. Yeah, you have a flashlight? Absolutely.
And she's 8 months pregnant, you said?
Pardon?
You said she's 8 months pregnant?
Yes, ma'am. Can you get a flash card for me over there? Is that possible?
Is this over there at Dry Creek Park?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is that over there at Dry Creek Park?
Yes, that's what it is. I don't know. I don't know. She's 8 months pregnant. There can't be that many people. She's got short black hair. She's about 5'1".
Hold on, she's 5'1"?
Yeah. Dark eyes.
Dark hair and eyes?
Yes.
Home without the leash, right?
The dog came home on the leash without her.
Okay, you're gonna So her husband is looking for her right now. Are you going to stay here at the...
I'll stay here and find out. Yes, if I have to stay here, I...
We're going to send a master over there as soon as they're available. Okay, you're at right now.
Okay, good.
What's the phone number there, sir?
Okay, my house number is...
No, no, where you're at. Is that where you live at Marcy Way?
No,
okay.
My house.
What's your phone number? Mm-hmm. Okay, and her husband's name was?
Scott
Peterson. Do you know what he's wearing?
No, he just called me from the house. I have no idea. He's walking, he's going over there looking for him. He's not in
house. Okay. What's her husband's phone number there?
Her house number?
Mm-hmm.
It's
Okay, we'll have someone out there as soon as they're available.
Let me give you the cell phone. He might have his cell phone with him.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll throw it out there as soon as they're available, Ron. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll throw it out there as soon as they're available.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is interesting to me. The first thing that he says is that Scott went golfing.
Yep. So Scott had planned out this event. So he had told everyone what he was going to do. But obviously when he was seen picking up the boat, he had to change his story and say he went fishing because he was seen. So and so he knows that was going to be part of the issue because he certainly didn't want people to think that he was fishing when she was found in water later. So, yeah, so this is where it starts to unravel, is that we have the 911 call and this is going to play into it because the stepdad believed that he had gone golfing and Scott may have even said, I've just got home from golf. We don't know that.
Mm.
But, yeah, so we're starting to see that these gaps begin to appear because what he's told people and what actually happened is two very different things. And once people start to question part of it, it's a house of cards, just falls down.
Well, it seems like he laid it out pretty well, but then, had, mm-hmm. you know, when you're scrambling to fix up issues mm-hmm. like being seen, you've got a problem. Let's go back to the police interview. The officer gets to an important question.
You guys have any problems? Marriage problems?
No.
Everything's good?
Mm-hmm.
You've been married 4 years?
Yeah.
Okay, very short.
Amazing, isn't it? So he chats with other answers and talks about Martha Stewart and where the dog was and which door he used to enter and exit and where the mop was and everything. Do you have any marriage problems? No.
Yeah. Well,
you know, like,
it's interesting you say that, Amanda, because compare those two grunts to how he answers the next question.
The few times you walked in the park, you said that you have seen campers, bombs or whatever. And has Lacey ever complained to you about somebody bothering her?
No, I mean, like I said, no, and I don't think it's ever come up to her and accosted her in any way. You know, she has times that she's felt uncomfortable, and thankful she has the dog. We've called, you know, the police a couple times about these people down there just to get them to move on. You know, and it's not uncommon for Lacey or myself to, you know, wake one of these guys or ladies up and tell them to get lost.
Bit of a red flag there?
Oh, it certainly is. I mean, ask if there's any issues, any grunts, and ask if there's any issues at the park. He talks for 50 seconds on just that one question. You know, this is because he doesn't want to talk about his marriage because he'd had numerous affairs and is actually seeing someone at the time of this interview and had spoken to her. So, you know, it's quite interesting when he doesn't want to lie, he doesn't want to answer.
Interesting. Well, when they searched Peterson's car, they found an old gun. The officer was interested in it and asks Peterson a tough question. Again, he answers quickly because of what Amanda's just said, but then asks a question that raises another red flag.
Would you be willing for me to take a gunshot residue off your hands?
Sure, no problem. Would exhaust show up as gunshot residue or totally different?
What? Exhaust?
Yeah, from that outboard.
Well, you showered after you said, so I'm not thinking this is even going to be clean, but no, it wouldn't.
Okay.
What? That was dumb, right? That was a dumb follow-up.
Oh, yes, that's the moment you go, yep, mate, you're gone. You're gone and you know it. I'm sorry, I get a thrill out of seeing people caught. You know, it's just pretty cool because at the same time, and this is why we're going to do some of these on camera one day, he looks at his hands.
Oh.
You know, but then that police officer reminds him, yeah, but you've already had a shower, so it really doesn't matter anyway, does it? You know, but it's those sorts of cues that they look for. This is what they're waiting for. So all of the other questions, you know, because, you know, they would ask, well, do you have a gun? You know, it's just protocol, you have a gun, your wife's disappeared. It's now showing Peterson what the officer is thinking just to make sure that they're covering all their bases, you know. But like a normal person would be saying, why are you sitting here talking to me? Get out there and find her. She's missing. It's cold. It's December. It's Christmas. She's pregnant. And I'm sorry, I called her middle-aged when she was only 26. I apologise for that. You know, there's all these flags that he should be shouting out at this officer saying, stop wasting your time talking to me. But the fact that he's sitting there and answering these questions and talking about pancakes on Martha Stewart proves that he has no fear of what's happened because he knows that what's happened, they're not going to find.
Well, things are about to ramp up, Amanda, and we're going to have to come back for a part two on this one because there's some big clips that reveal a lot. So we will continue this case next week in our Season 10 series of Monsters Who Murder Serial Killer Confessions. Amanda, we're back with a vengeance, baby.
I know that we're laughing about a murder, which is really, really horrible, but I just love when the officer gets his man and the stupid things that happen is my favourite thing.
Well, you have to hear what happens next, and don't forget, if you want to hear it earlier, go to Patreon, subscribe for $5, and you can get next week's episode now. If you're on Patreon, you still have to wait a week, but you're getting it before everyone else. We'll see you next week on Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. Remember to go to patreon.com/MWMconfessions.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.